testing. So, lots of things to talk about. I just pulled up this one article just now, and I was kind of blown away by, whoa, this thing is really, really interesting because it happens to be something I was going to talk about today from the Wall Street Journal. It's talking about baby boomers and who's going to buy their 21 million homes. That is just really, really close to something else I was going to talk about. So I'll probably get to that as time goes on right here on the show today. There are all kinds of things to talk about. Very interesting things about Social Security that I'll talk about. A little bit of research done on the actuarial adjustments that have been made to Social Security. And do they actually make sense? And, you know, some things about it. You know, want somebody to help somebody retire well. There's some really good advice for if you want somebody to retire well. Some of the things that they ought to be thinking about, which happen to be some things that I've talked about for, well, coming up on 20 years on this show. So it's starting to become more mainstream. Some not the investment stuff, and that'll never get fixed. It seems like the investment industry is just bent on screwing up people's retirement because of the way marketing goes. And you'd go, well, what are you talking about? Why are you screwing up? In what way? Why would they do that? Why would they do that? I mean, why would they go and screw up somebody's retirement? Well, it has to do, really, with marketing. And, you know, if you're trying to sell investments, getting people to really understand investments is just way too hard. And we don't want to work too hard. We don't want to go through all of that. And people are emotional basket cases. So what we're going to do is just going to give them what they want. And they'll stay customers if we give them what they want. You can just say, okay, well, what do you want me to do? Oh, yeah, I want this and I want that. You know, give me low cost and high return. And give me, you know, hey, I heard about this in the news today. I heard this area of the market's doing really well. Can't you put me more in that? Well, if you say no, then they go, oh, well, I'll take my business to somebody that will let me be dysfunctional. And that's, you know, where coaching comes in. So, you know, sometimes I can be ornery and say no to people. No, I'm not going to do that. Don't listen close. Not for you, to you. I'm not going to do that to you. You know, because that would be wrong. You know, letting people just go with their instincts and emotions, because our instincts and our emotions really play against us. Our instincts go toward pleasure, stay away from pain, emotions. You know, when I'm seeing market upturns, I'm going, oh, man, I can get rich. When I see market downturns, I go, oh, I can lose everything. So, you know, what I do is I respond based on those things. It's just, you know, you got to realize people are very emotional beings. It's a lot of psychology. I've got a friend of mine, actually, that's what he says to people when they say, I'm thinking about going into the financial services industry. What do you think? And he'll go, well, go get a degree in psychology is what he tells him, which I think, you know, that's not a bad piece of advice. Then go get a financial planning degree. Make sure you got that, because too many people get into the business and they just start selling stuff and they really don't know how it fits together or that it may not be necessarily great for people. So anyway, there are some personality traits that could make you at higher risk of going broke in retirement. What are they? Well, let's talk about that just for a second. What is, you know, some people are really successful in retirement. Some people just, they don't do so great. You know, they either don't accumulate enough for retirement, and you got this great mass of people that are hidden from view, from society. You know, older people. And part of it's because they're in poor health. They don't want to get out, and they don't want to go out, and they don't want to do anything. But a big part of it is because they can't afford to do anything. You know, because they don't have enough, they're living from paycheck to paycheck on Social Security, and that's pretty much it. They don't have any savings. And, you know, what happens is this. People have a tendency to not accumulate enough money for retirement many times because they want to live for today, and they go, tomorrow's a long way off. You know what? Good grief. That's 20 years, 30 years from now. I want to have fun right now. And then 20 years comes by, and they go, whoa, I had no idea it would go this fast. No clue. And, you know, as I guess it was Mae West that said, if I'd known I would live this long, I'd taken better care of myself, right? And if I'd known I'd live this long, I probably would have saved a little bit more money for the future. So I'm not sitting there going, I had nothing to do. And people, older people, a lot of people are suffering from loneliness. They can't get out. They don't get out. They don't have relationships. They don't get out and do things. They can't afford to do the things they want to do. And what is it that causes people to be at higher risk of going broke in retirement? Well, there is actually a psychological study regarding this. If you want to retire rich and stay that way, well, the personality and your personal traits may have more of an impact on how fast you spend your retirement savings than factors such as age, marital status, desire to leave an inheritance, and whether you continue to work during retirement. You know, so certain things, you know, people say, well, I don't want to run out of money. And they go, well, if you're married, you know, it typically bodes better because of the fact that a husband will take care of a wife if she's in ill health, or vice versa. Wife takes care of a husband if he's in ill health. And, you know, for a person that says, well, I want to leave an inheritance, well, you know, they may want to leave one, but, you know, there may be certain psychological factors that cause them not to be able to do much in that area. As a matter of fact, I've had family members, and I've seen it, where, you know, there was a family member that we had that was, everybody knew that he was wealthy, and everybody thought, you know, this, he's great, he does wonderful. But he had certain psychological factors that caused him to really blow it when it came to investing. And I remember getting into this business early on. And, you know, people talking to me going, you know, hey, Paul, what do you think about this? And I was like, don't ask me. I just, you know, yes, I got a securities license. I got a Series 6. And then I got a Series 7, you know, allowing me to do stocks and bonds and options contracts. And, you know, I got all the licenses I needed to call myself a financial advisor, but I was not a financial, I didn't feel worthy of calling myself that, you know, simply just because of the fact that I didn't feel like I knew enough, and I knew I didn't know enough. And I remember when this family member asked me, hey, well, you know, what do you think about this thing that I'm doing? So I have no clue. Well, as it turned out, pretty much everything was lost on this thing that the family member was doing, and it was sad, and I couldn't warn him because I didn't know any better. I didn't know anything about, you know, this stuff. I didn't really get, you know, the risks of what he was doing. Now, here was the thing is, and I've had this not just one person. I've had many people that I grew up with ask me my advice later on, and sometimes they would, and this is even after I knew what I was doing and after I had gone through this all this academic study, and people would ask me, and then they would ignore my advice because, of course, a prophet's without honor in their own hometown, and they would not listen to anything simply because, and sometimes it gets down to ego. So ego can be a real issue. That can be a real trait that causes you to do poorly because you won't take anybody's advice. You know, you're self-sufficient, and the reality of it is that we all are dependent upon each other, you know, and, you know, there are things that I have no clue about that I really need to hire other people for. And there are things that I know how to do that other people really don't know how to do and they'll hire us for. Really gets down to it. So that's one thing. They had a couple traits, conscientiousness, and that has something to do with it, you know, because when you're conscientious, you're going to be organized, and typically organized people tend to engage in planning, right? And they're going to be more thorough. They're going to make sure that when they do planning, they come in with a list of questions. And I tell you, I see people that come in our offices and they have a list of questions. I want to cover this, this, this. I love it. Somebody walks in for an annual meeting. I've had a few of them this week. You know, longtime clients that came in and they had a list of questions. And I encourage you, do that. Sit down. Write down everything you're thinking of because you're not going to think of it in the meeting. It's not going to be something that's going to come to your mind. You need to write this stuff down ahead of time, every question that you have, every concern, every worry that you have, and really think about it before you have meetings and go through planning meetings. And be thorough, you know, and that's because that's a trait of people that do well in retirement. Those are people that don't go broke in retirement, according to this article. And they're hardworking. Now, typically, you'll find that people that are hardworking, they, you know, are diligent in what they do, and they're diligent in putting money away for retirement. Now, sometimes what happens with people is they'll just get a windfall, and all of a sudden a bunch of money comes their way, and they didn't really work that hard for it, so therefore it doesn't mean that much. It doesn't have a whole lot of, you don't put any effort in, you don't appreciate something. You ever find that in anything that you do? You're just handed something, you don't really go, you know, I'm going to cherish this. I'm going to take care of it and make sure that it lasts. And you just, I guess maybe it's a easy come, easy go. I don't know. And they're also cautious. And I think this is important because people are cautious. They don't go step out and take risks that they shouldn't be taking. A lot of people I see will buy individual stocks, for example, and they'll throw caution to the wind. They'll buy individual companies, even though individual stocks, when I buy single stocks or small numbers of companies, and I see this in people's investment portfolios, they hand it to a broker and the broker does this. And they say, hey, we're going to form your own mutual fund. You're going to have your own mutual fund. You'll save the management fees. Well, the problem is that the returns, you know, the management fees would have been nothing compared to what they lose in doing this kind of thing and the risk that they take in doing it. You know, because when you're dealing with smaller numbers of companies, companies come and go much more rapidly today than they ever have. You know, you go back 50 years and the average company stayed in the S&P 500 for over 60 years. Nowadays, the average company stays in the S&P 500 for only 18 years. Companies come and go much more rapidly. It's much more hazardous today than ever to invest in individual stocks. You know, so that's one thing. So, you know, they're organized, thorough, hardworking, and cautious. And financial efficacy, which is a sense of resilience and control over financial situations, they had that. So they tend to be resilient. They bounce back from things. They tend to want to exercise control. So they want to be involved, is the way I read that. They want to be involved in the process. You know, I find that a lot of people say, I don't want to understand. I don't want to get it. And they're just, they want to stick their head in the sand. And when you stick your head in the sand, that's when you can get in real trouble. You're not watching things on a regular basis. You're not being a part of the planning process. I think it's really, really important that people get engaged. They know what they're doing, why they're doing it, as you often hear me say. So this is, all these things right here had a direct relationship with the rate in which people withdrew from their retirement savings accounts. So people that weren't conscientious and weren't hardworking, organized, and thorough and all of that withdrew at higher rates than they should because they just really kind of put and turned a blind eye to what was going on. You know, I've seen this. I've had clients that tune into the show regularly. And they attend workshops, and they watch educational videos that we put out on a regular basis, and they like being part of the process, and they watch the numbers. You know, I teach them how to tell whether their investment portfolio did okay, which is a process called benchmarking. What you do is you take various investments that you own, and you compare the returns to the areas of the market that they're investing in. I teach them how to do that and what to look for and what are the warning signs. And you know, if I see something being under its benchmark, is it okay? Is it a problem? Is there something that actually explains it? And they understand those processes. But, you know, the person that doesn't pay any attention, and that's the person that just, you know, says, my advisor's handling that. My advisor's a nice person. I don't worry about it. And they don't realize that when you don't worry about it, you don't watch the process, that's when, and me, even, you know, you people are nice people. You know, advisors may be nice people, but they aren't that conscientious if they know you're not paying attention. I've just seen that. Been in this industry 30 years, and I've seen a lot of stuff. You know, the less you pay attention, the more they can cut corners, the more they can get away with. You got to be part of the process. Now, I don't worry about the folks that are watching over things and watching the videos and attending workshops as much as I do the blind trusters. Because the blind trusters tend to be, it'll all work out. You know, my advisor's a really nice person, and they're really good. They wouldn't do anything wrong, blah, blah, blah. And maybe not. Maybe not knowingly they wouldn't. But you don't know what they don't know, as I often like to say. You know, a lot of times people think financial advisors are way more qualified than they actually are because they speak at a higher level. Maybe they talk about something that is above your ken, something that is, you know, outside of your knowledge as far as vocabulary goes, nomenclature they may use that is outside of your knowledge or the language that you talk every day. And people will say financial language is a totally different language. So, you know, once somebody speaks above your level, then you think that they know a whole lot more than they do. And that may or may not be the case. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, with that blind trust, you can have a situation where all of a sudden things go wrong, and there's no going back. You know, you can't do anything about it. Now, who are the people that really did bad? Who did poorly? Pulled too much money out of accounts, really didn't do well in retirement, and had a greater risk of running out of money. Well, in the psychological study that was done, I don't even know where the study was done. I should be able to figure this out. I don't even see where it's listed as where they did the study. Oh, there it is, Texas Tech was where it was. Okay, Texas Tech, they did the study. They say people who were more open to new experiences, and, you know, think risk takers, you know, people that are risk takers. They're open to new experience. They're creative, imaginative, adventurous, curious, and, you know, they may be more inclined to do things, you know, try out new investments, you know, step out there and take a walk on the wild side, so to speak. Those people tended to do very badly. And, you know, and a lot of times people take risks that aren't compensated risks, you know, like I was talking about individual stocks, and they'll buy, you know, they'll actually go in and jump into technology companies and buy funds that are investing in sectors. You know, when you hear an advisor talk to you about buying commodities funds or sector funds or technology, like, you know, technology or energy funds or real estate or you know, these types of things, realize that these are all sectors and there can be great risk in doing that, but no expected extra reward, because those sectors, a technology company, for example, doesn't want to pay any more to use your money than any other company does. So there's no extra expected return, but there's more risk because you're concentrating on one area of the economy. The other type of people that don't do well, interestingly, are more agreeable types. You know, why is it that they run out of money more frequently than anybody else? Well, it's because they're sympathetic, they're caring, they're warm and helpful, which is a great trait. I mean, it's a really wonderful trait. For people to be caring, warm, and helpful, that's who you want to surround yourself with, isn't it? Well, the problem is those types of people do what? They tend to help people that they probably shouldn't be helping. And more about that in a second. So then they had that, and then in people that were more neurotic, I thought this was interesting. You know, people that are nervous, worried, moody, and are not calm, they were more likely than others to withdraw from their retirement accounts at a greater rate. And why? Well, you think about this. You know, market goes down. Oh, my goodness. You know, more neurotic type of person, which is more nervous and worried and moody and you know, they can't stay calm because they're always worried about losing everything. They, after the market goes down, they withdraw money really quick. I can't lose it. I can't afford to lose this. And then what they do is they actually bring upon themselves that which they feared the most. You know, that's literally what they do, is they end up withdrawing and they sell low. And then when things look okay again, then they buy in again. And that's just, you know, the polar opposite of what they ought to be doing, right? And, you know, and then go back to this other one, though. More agreeable. You know, so let's take these people that are more open or they're more agreeable. What's going on here? Well, the people that are more agreeable tend to be warm, sympathetic, and accommodating and caring. And therefore, what they do is they prioritize not themselves. And this is kind of, like I said, it's a good trait to have, being other-centered. But the problem is it can actually be dysfunctional. Because they prioritize giving financial support to others, like family and friends and charity, over preserving money in their own accounts. And if you think about it, you may be really caring about these people, but ended up being dependent upon them because of the fact that you ran your portfolios down. And, you know, it's just I remember this one couple many years ago I worked with, and, you know, husband and wife, and the wife would actually take care of one of their kids and pull money out constantly. And he was constantly getting in trouble, constantly running into problems and constantly trying businesses that failed. And, you know, husband would actually just go, I can't believe she keeps doing this. Well, she passed away, and he kept doing it. It didn't end. Which, to me, I was like, whoa, I figured it would be all over at that point. No, it ended up going on and on. And you go, well, why do people do this? And sometimes it's because people need to be needed. You know, they just, that is something that is so strong, the desire to be needed and to be wanted and to be appreciated, that they will do anything to buy that love from people. And sometimes it's, you know, maybe that somebody, dad was away a lot when the child was young, or mom was away a lot, or some, you know, let's say, that, and they feel guilty. You know, maybe they weren't around as much as they should have been. So now later on in life, they're trying to make it up to that person. And when that person comes a calling and says, hey, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? They feel the guilt and the need to give in order just to assuage that guilt that they have about past, you know, inadequacies maybe that they had. And they, again, buying love, and they're buying acceptance, they're buying approval. And a lot of this stuff is, those of you that, you know these types of things, know it's kind of a codependent type of thing. You know, they're dependent upon each other, and they feed off of each other, and they end up enabling that person in a negative cycle, and the person never ends up taking care of themselves. They never grow to take care of themselves. And, you know, the study, the authors of the study, who is Acevedo and Christopher Browning, also a financial planning professor at Texas Tech, cautioned the higher withdrawal rate isn't always a bad thing, though. Said higher portfolio withdrawal rate is concerning if it places the individual on a path to run out of money too early. However, if the higher withdrawal rate does not run the risk of running out of money, then it may be very well facilitating a life well lived. And, you know, in reality, typically you can withdraw a little higher rate early on in retirement many times, because people spend more at the very, very beginning of retirement. And then their spending tends to wane a little bit as they get a little bit older, and because they don't want to do things anymore. They hadn't done, they've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, I'm done. And then they spend a little bit more later on. So you got to think about healthcare expenses a little bit later on. So anyway, very interesting study regarding psychology. And you know me, I love psychology when it comes to retirement planning, and find that it's fascinating. And just human behavior is just fascinating to me. So those are the personality traits. Paul Winkler, the Investor Coaching Show, paulwinkler.com. You can also make sure that if you like just caught the tail end, is, oh, I wanted to hear more of that, you can always get the podcast at my website, paulwinkler.com. This is the Investor Coaching Show on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. And I'm back. This is the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, talking about the world of money and investing. Okay, so I saw something this week, and I'm just going to play this for you. It was on Fox Business. I'll make a comment about it. That's Stuart Varney here, and there was Maria Bartiromo. And let me just take a listen to this.
Good morning, everyone. Big smile. Here we go again. Another round of stock market records. First thing on a Monday morning. And for the first time ever, the Dow looks very, very, very likely to open above 28,000. It's almost exactly 10,000 points above where it was when Donald Trump was first elected. What's behind this historic rally? Okay.
Okay. So, number one, talking about getting all excited. And this is the media. They get really excited when markets go up. And they get your emotions involved. Oh, my goodness, I'm going to get rich. Oh, you know, it's really going to go great. And, of course, you know, the rest of the week wasn't that hot. But you know, it looked like in this particular day that this was recorded that things were, you know, the market's going to hit 28,000. And it's 10. But you know, here's the point. What did he say? 10,000 above, almost 10,000 above when Trump was elected. Of course, he's a big Trump supporter.
Okay, let's talk stock markets, shall we? Dow closed in record territory Friday above the 28,000 level. Market watcher Keith Fitz joins us now. Look, I've been doing this, covering the American markets, for over 40 years now. You've been doing it for about 25, 30 years. You ever seen anything like this? I mean, a rally this long, this explosive. You ever seen this before?
No, Stuart, and it really hasn't existed. This is the single longest bull running market in recorded history. It's the most hated market in history. We've got the most acerbic politics in history. We've got.
Okay, so you're basically saying this is the best thing that's ever happened. It's never been this good. And, you know, wow, we're really knocking it off. And, you know, and listen, I stay apolitical around here. And I try to really stay out of that just simply because, you know, markets go up in all different types of markets with all our markets go up with all different types of presidencies and leaders. And the reality of it is that I try to stay out of it because I can get people really worked up if, let's say, you know, the market is kind of getting a little bit shaky and maybe somebody's a little bit worried about that, yeah, the new president coming in is of an opposite party of what they like and what they want, then you can end up with a situation where the person says, that's it, I'm getting out of the market, I can't stand this, I'm really, you know, just, you know, this person is of a different belief than I am, and, you know, I'm gone, I'm out. Well, number one, that ends up going on in both parties. And I'm going to talk about that more in the third hour. It's really, really interesting. There's some research that I'm going to cover in the third hour that's just mind-blowing. So just stay tuned for that. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that idea. But I am going to spend some time right now on this idea, what he says. Have you ever seen a market like this? And what his guest says, no, never. No, it's the greatest run, and blah, blah, blah. And he's going, and they're talking about how wonderful it is. And how great the market is, and what would that do if you're a Trump supporter? You're going, yeah, this guy rocks, man. Look at what he's done for the stock market. Look what he's done for the economy. And, you know, if you're a Trump supporter, if you all of a sudden start to see that somebody on the other side of the aisle is gaining traction against him in the upcoming election, it would scare you to death, right? Now, he says, have you ever seen anything like this? Now, here's the deal. The Dow is up about 45% from the beginning of Trump's presidency. Now, number one, it's only 30 stocks, as I often like to point out. It's just one area of the market, A. But that's not bad, right? 45%. And if you look at it, you go, well, what did it do in the first 3 years of Obama's presidency? Well, it was up 51%. So you say, well, wait a minute. He said, have you ever seen anything like this? And the guy goes, no. And you've been there. I've been doing this for 30 years, he says, and you've been over 20. Well, wait a minute. Did they just miss the more recent history that it went up 51% in the first 3 years of Obama? And let's go back a little bit further. 60%. You know, it's just so you see, I'm not talking about Republican versus Democrat here. 60% in the first 3 years of Reagan's second term. So you had even a greater increase in Reagan's second term. Now, if you take a look at the whole term of Clinton, you know, the S&P 500 went up 3.5 times. You know, a dollar grew at about $3.50 in the S&P 500. Huge returns. Now, if you look at small value and large and small value stocks, which are, you know, those a different area of the market, around 3.9 to almost 4 times. If you look at Reagan's whole term, S&P 500 went up, you know, 2.89 times, just shy of 3 times. Small value stocks, 5 times. And you go, whoa, U.S. was phenomenal. That's great. Man, Reagan was great for the U.S. market, right? Phenomenal, great. Well, international stocks, though, went up just under 6 times under Reagan. And international small companies, 7 times, 7-fold increase. Nah, never seen a market like this. Come on. And my point here is this, folks. You know, on this radio station, rightfully, all the hosts, my friends here, all pick on the media and the misleading information put out there by the mainstream media. And it's all over the place. But get this, so many times we look for information about financial matters and we look around, we go, well, I don't trust, you maybe don't trust this big investment firm, nor should you blindly trust any investment firm or any insurance company or anybody for that matter. You shouldn't blindly trust anybody. But often we don't even think about the fact that we are listening to members of the media when a financial writer talks about something. and we just blindly trust that they're being objective. Because maybe they say something in their writings that actually agrees with something that we believe. And what happens is when they say something, and this is how a lot of times people get away with things, is they will say something that, yeah, that's true. And now once they start getting you to, and this is, there is actually in sales, this is what people will do in sales. I remember one time going through a sales training, and the guy goes, do this, get the person saying yes, get them saying yes, ask them questions where the answer to the question is yes, and then ask them another question, the answer is yes, and get another word, the next question, and the answer is going to be to the affirmative. And if you get them in that habit, then when you ask for the sale, they'll say yes. And we don't realize how easily we're manipulated. The reality of it. Don't let yourself be manipulated. The media is not your friend when it comes to investing. I don't care. They may be nice. They really believe in what they're saying. But don't blindly trust this stuff, folks. Become an educated investor. Paul Winkler, you're listening to the Investor Coaching Show right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Here on the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler talking about the world of money and investing. And looking at, well, you know what, let me hit this thing real quick, because I started off talking about this a little bit at the beginning of the show, and it might be a good time to talk about this. Baby boomers. Baby boomers, I guess, last year for people being born that are a part of the baby boom generation, 1964, 1946-1964 was what the numbers were for that. Now, baby boomers, if they want to stay home, senior housing now faces a budding glut. Now, this is what's happening right now around the country. Rise in technologies. And technology has all kinds of impact that we don't even think about necessarily. You know, you look back and you go, man, where have we come in the past 30 to 40 years? How can we walk around and say that somehow life just isn't that great anymore? I mean, you can fly around the country. You can be on your Wi-Fi flying around the country. You can be watching movies and whichever, not just the movie that the airline likes to show. You can watch whatever you want. And you talk to your kids, you go, and literally, if your kids are halfway across the country, you can have them on a computer screen right in front of you talking and chatting via, you know, Skype or one of these programs where you just get them on video. You sit there and talk and hang out with each other. I mean, look at that. Look at how fast we can get from one place to another. You know, how literally we can talk to you and be in the grocery store and go, you know, hey, honey, do you need any of this over? I'm here at the grocery store right now, and you can talk to, bam, you don't have to go find a payphone. And I don't know, payphones, I guess the only use that they have anymore is for Superman. That's about all the use that they have anymore, because nobody, you don't see them anymore. It used to be something, and kid, younger people listening, you go, what's a payphone? What on earth is that? But you look at the technologies and how they're affecting the elderly right now. Well, one of the ways they're affecting the elderly is that they're able to stay in their homes much longer, which is what they want. And what's happening is the elderly people are going, I don't want to leave my home. I like my home. I like where I am, and I don't want to leave it. And what's happening, this trend is upending one of commercial real estate's biggest bets, which is that aging booby, Freudian slip there, huh? Baby boomers would leave their residences in droves for senior housing, that they would ditch there and go, that's it, I'm out of here. And I'm going to go over and move to the senior center. The developers and senior housing companies have been spending billions of dollars on this. And over the past 5 years, they're building facilities, they're providing housing, food, medical care, you know, they got all these things that are pretty kind of cool things, actually. And you think about it, you would think that people would want this, right? You know, housing, you got housing right there, you got food, you got medical care right on the campus or wherever the senior center is, and assistance for the elderly, and you have progressive care facilities, a big thing that I studied when I was going through my retirement income certified professional designation. And while these properties have been filling up with people born during the Depression, you know, the baby boomers, and what's happening, their needs would require the hundreds of thousands of new units if previous demand patterns persist. And what's going on is that these people just don't want to live in these facilities as in as great as numbers that they thought they would want to live in them. Now, this has implications not just for the elderly, but think about this as an investor. How many people have bought real estate investment trusts and real estate funds on the idea that, hey, baby boomers are getting older, this would be a great investment? And same thing with healthcare funds. You know, people would buy healthcare funds in their 401ks. And they're, hey, look, baby boomers are going to go there. Healthcare funds ought to do great. And the reality of it is that that's not the way investment markets work. But it's a good sounding sales pitch, isn't it? People are getting older. They're going to buy healthcare. You need a healthcare fund in your retirement plan. You know, so investment advisors put that stuff in there, honestly thinking that it would help. But they don't realize that they're just taking more risk. As I said earlier, it's just a sector fund. Those companies don't want to pay any more to use your money than anybody else does. Same thing when I was talking about technology earlier, right? But here's the thing that's instructive, is if you are this person that wants to buy into this idea and invest in this marketing concept and invest in the idea that I could buy this housing and I could make a bunch of money and that investment vehicle will go up greatly in value and it will really, really serve your retirement well. Well, this is a case in point where things don't always work out the way you thought they would work out. You know, I did a video on this quite a while ago. If you'd go to my website, paulwinkler.com, you have to got to go through and search. I'm going to make this a little bit better in the upcoming website. We're totally redoing some things right now. Make this better. But you can do a search right now, and you can do real estate search. And it talks about important... The title of the video is Real Estate, Important Considerations. Because I find a lot of times people invest in real estate or investment funds or real estate funds and things like that, and they don't think about this stuff. That you could have some serious risks to real estate. You know, like tax law changes could come and all of a sudden the value of real estate drops precipitously. You could have a neighborhood decline. Maybe you're buying individual properties and you're buying properties in an area and the neighborhood has a decline. Or businesses move and all of a sudden the demand for property goes down because businesses move out of the area. Or somebody sues you, somebody's on your property, they get hurt, they sue you, and now there's liability and you got a problem there. Or maybe there are demand changes. You know, I was talking about that article I was reading just before I got on the show. And it was about, I don't even know where I threw that doggone thing. But it was, where was that? Oh, there it was. Okay, Boomer is the title of the article. It was in the Wall Street Journal. Okay, Boomer, who's going to buy your 21 million homes? And what they were talking about in here is that baby boomers have all these homes all over the place in America. They just don't happen to be in areas that younger people want to live. You know, so what they're finding is some of these places are turning into ghost towns. Nobody wants to live there, and they can't sell the doggone homes. You know, they're on golf courses and, you know, community centers and you know, near man-made lakes and all of these things. And people are thinking, well, that's what I wanted to have. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the next generation is going to want those things. Maybe it's in towns that aren't necessarily as hot as the one that you wanted to live in when you were retiring. Maybe there are certain things, tax issues and tax considerations. You know, a lot of older people, they get tax breaks because they don't get any increase in property taxes as long as they live and as long as they're living in an area. That's very common in various places around the country. But a younger person would look at it and go, well, I don't benefit from that. You got that tax break. But now when I buy the house from you, I don't get that tax break. So there are a lot of considerations, and real estate can actually be pretty risky when it gets down to it. And they said in the article, it says, but this wager on elderly care is falling short of expectations. And there are concerns that it could become one of the biggest real estate miscalculations in recent memory, some analysts suggest. And here it is. People don't think of real estate as a gamble, but it is. And we normally only hear the success stories. We don't hear about the bad stuff. And real estate has a tendency to go through longer cycles. You know, we think of the stock market as more risky because the cycles are shorter. You go from boom to, up and bull markets to bear markets to bull markets to bear markets. You may have several bull, bear, trends inside of one market cycle for real estate. And they said, finally, before I go to break here, driving these efforts is a belief that seniors would prefer to remain at home near their families and friends and live amongst others their own age or older. And I just don't want to live. And quote unquote, this guy says, people don't want to go to a place where there are only a bunch of older people. You know, a lot of times people want a younger people, older people. They ought to mix. Older people can give a ton of wisdom to the younger people. Younger people can give youth and enthusiasm. You know, I've heard a lot of my clients say this, that they avoid the senior centers for that very reason. They don't want to go and hang out and talk with a bunch of people about their health problems. You know, so bottom line, real estate is a business, and businesses aren't without risk. Don't look at it as the panacea to all your investing problems. It's just another asset category, and it can be a risky asset category in reality, and here's just another example of it. Paul Winkler, you're listening to The Investor Coaching Show right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. All right, I'm back here on the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, talking about the world of money and investing. Wow, I was just looking at that one article I was talking about before the break. Seniors are expected to vacate roughly 21 million homes over the next two decades. That's more than the amount of new properties sold during the previous two-decade period that ended with the housing boom. And who's going to take over those homes? I know that this is controversial, but, you know, it may be some immigration may be needed to actually create more demand for homes. And, and I see both sides of it. I was having a conversation with somebody this week, and he was talking about when he was younger and he couldn't get a job because immigrants were taking the job that he had. And we've certainly had periods in time where there just simply weren't enough jobs to go around. And, you know, you look at it, a lot of times it's because of something else that the government was doing, and that's what we talked about. I made the comment during the period of time in question, and he says, you know, it really bugged me. We were talking about immigration in general, and he goes, it really bugged me because, you know, these people were coming into the country, and I needed a job, but because they would work for such a lower rate than I would, they ended up getting the job that I would have taken, and it was kind of a challenging time. And I said, man, I've been there myself. I remember that as well. I remember having to know somebody to get a job at a fast food restaurant. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, it can be rough, downright rough at some points in time. And I said, you know, if you think about it, during the period in question that we're talking about, and I started naming off all the government regulations, the taxes, the tax rates that we were dealing with, and the issues that actually created just a bad time where companies were going, we're out of here, and the jobs dried up. Now, they were great times for the stock market, which is, people think that's odd. The economy stunk, and the stock market was great. Yeah, that happens quite often. That's because the market is a leading economic indicator. But it's fascinating that that we're looking at this same argument going back and forth, and the reality of it is I like what Alan Greenspan, he talked about how, you know, immigration and having higher income, more educated people come in would actually create more jobs. And I think that's really what you got to concentrate on, is the reality of how immigration is done. Because if you don't have it, you have a situation like Japan where the economy is just killed, you know, for years and years and decades because of the lack of any kind of integrated immigration strategy. Yeah, so in the next hour, I'm going to be talking a little bit about how And so I always tell people, you know, it doesn't mean the stock market won't go up. So don't get panicked over that. But, you know, get involved and get involved as far as politicians go and contact and, you know, just get educated about this so that you can speak in an educated manner to your friends and politicians and you know, something maybe you can do. I want to talk about the next hour. I'm going to get into how far off are the actuarial adjustments for Social Security benefits. So, you know, people talk about how much they give up. You hear these things about, you know, people giving up so much in benefits and Social Security not getting all the benefits that are rightfully due to them and why and how does that work. Talk a little bit about that. If you want to help somebody retire well, I'm actually going to talk a little bit about what can you do for them. And, you know, China. As a matter of fact, there's something really interesting about China with their slowing economy. And this is something, I was talking to somebody about this week. And, I don't make predictions on how, when, or anything like that. But I just remember just all too well because I was so into economics when I was younger even. And that's Paul Samuelson, economist. And he was just adamantly thinking that the Russians would actually overtake us economically because their productivity was so much greater than ours. And this is back in the 70s. They're going to knock it out. They're going to beat us. They're making so many more in their productivity. They're creating more of this product than we are. And what they failed to realize is what they were creating was junk. And they had to create more because the shoes that they made only lasted a week. I got a lot more after this. A lot more after this. Stay tuned for the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler. The podcast on the website, paulwinkler.com. You can always download that. But stay tuned. Be back right after this with a lot more on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed this week's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there. And if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Till next week, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.